is the Hot Zone. Engaging with the news in a whole new way, international war correspondent Chuck Holton brings insight into areas of crisis and lets you help those affected.
Hey folks, Chuck Holton here. Thanks for watching The Hot Zone. Today is part two of my interview with author and former Navy SEAL Matt Bracken. Now, Matt gets called all sorts of names by the left, and one of them is, you know, right-wing, wacko, conspiracy theorist, that sort of thing. But he wrote an article that I want you to read, and I'm having him talk about it on today's Hot Zone. This is part two, so make sure you go back and watch the first part as well. Now, back to your article, and what we're seeing, you wrote this in 2012. So you imagined that the unrest would come from the EBT system, which has been basically giving out free food to many people in the food desert in the inner cities for a long time. That goes under, the EBT cards start flashing zeros. These people get hungry and they start rampaging.
It's not only the EBT is not only a replacement for food stamps, like a credit card electronic replacement for food stamps. It is virtually a living wage. What they're talking about, like having a living wage, because the EBT card also folds in your Section 8 housing, which is how you can get like $800 towards your $1,000 rent, or it's your subsidy, you know, in many other areas. It's transportation. It's, you know, you can't pay your electric bill, medical. So the EBT card has become virtually a living wage, and we know. With creating dependency, I mean, look at the American Indians. Probably the worst disaster that ever happened to American Indians was the reservation system.
That's right.
You don't actually own your land.
You get more of what you subsidize and less of what you penalize.
Yes.
And unfortunately, we've been subsidizing poverty for a long time.
Yes. And the people that would like to see this country destroyed, people constantly ask. On the podcast yesterday, people said, Matt, do you think there will be foreign troops in America? And I said, no way. There won't be foreign – maybe – 10 or 20 years from now, but who can say what will happen then? But no, because our enemies will just be delighted to watch us go through a civil war.
So I want to
get to that.
What's
better from their perspective than us destroying ourselves?
Exactly. This is the important part of the article I wanted to get to. At the end of your article, you give a pretty dire image or idea of what could happen when people have poked the bear long enough. Look, we're very peaceable people. But as you said, there are millions of us out here who are very well trained, who have been through Ramadi. We've been through insurgencies. We understand military tactics and insurgent tactics. And when people like that get fed up and we start getting pulled out of our cars and beaten by the side of the road by these mobs of youths, we're going to fight back. And as you said in the article, when we start to fight back, we are the ones that the government will come after, and that will make the government our enemy as well. That's a scary, scary thought. Would you rewrite that in any way today, or do you still think that's a very possible scenario?
I think it's extremely possible, but I think that I didn't fold in. You know, you have to always add in tangential new input, like a pandemic.
Right.
So a pandemic where people who love to wear masks, like bank robbers and terrorists, are told you have to wear a mask. So, in an ordinary year, if 50 people show up in a crowd of 1,000 and those 50 are wearing masks because they're Antifa.
That's a problem. Yes.
But now it's much more easy for them to blend in because everybody is supposed to wear a mask. So it's like made to order for terrorists and criminals to be told everybody should wear a mask. You know, sunglasses, a hoodie, a ball cap, and you're basically anonymous. But what's unfolding, I think last night in Kentucky, might have been what will be considered the first skirmish. There was actually shots exchanged at a park in Lexington. This is the Brianna, the lady up in Kentucky that was a police shooting. Mm-hmm. But somebody came up with a long gun and started shooting into like the squatter tent city, the protesters. And it sounds, you know, it's hard to determine echoes and sonic cracks and things like that. But just by the cadence of it, it sounded like there was return fire, maybe from police, maybe from John Brown Gun Club or one of these other left wing armed groups. But it sounds, you know, somebody died, somebody else was shot, people were arrested. But I think that like in my article, the When the Music Stops article, when protests that block highways become common, you know, eventually there's going to be a reaction to it. And the reaction, you know, when so many millions of Americans have extremely capable weapons, like an AR-15 with a scope on it, you know, which is, you know, just by any knucklehead given, a couple hours of training can make 400-yard, you know, rested shots with that thing. And that means you're way out of visual range of the people you're shooting. This really changes equations in fundamental ways. You know, in the Spanish Civil War, people were handed bolt-action World War I surplus-era rifles with iron sights that had no marksmanship training. Well, I mean, it was virtually like a musket to these guys in terms of being able to hit what they were aiming at. It's a long, heavy rifle, bolt-action, iron sights. But any knucklehead with an AR-15 or a bolt or a scoped rifle, even if they stole it, if they're smart enough to realize that you don't shoot like this standing up, that you're going to put it on something steady, you could take any 10-year-old and have them making 500-yard shots in an hour. So this really changes the equation because it makes it a lot safer for a shooter to just say, you know what, I'm not putting up with somebody tearing down a George Washington statue. I'm going to park my van. I heard on the radio that they're getting ready to tear down my local Columbus or George Washington statue. That's going to be a very tempting concept for somebody to say, the guy that climbs up on his neck with the strap, I'm going to drop him. Or like in Kentucky last night, somebody just got out of his car and walked up with an AR-15. And there hasn't been a lot of details about that, even though somebody died. In Albuquerque last week, somebody was like leaving a protest of a conquistador statue being torn down. He was trying to detach, right? And he pulled out his Glock or, you know, Springfield and shot somebody and killed him. He was arrested, but then released. He may be charged later. So we're getting into the real, a real dangerous time when a spark in the right place could like set a dynamite factory on fire.
Right. I just imagine that you get even a dozen guys, 25 guys who say enough is enough. We're not putting up with this anymore. We're going to start doing pre-intelligence on these protests. And we're going to start, like you say, pulling up from 400 yards away in a very deliberate, pre-planned fashion and opening up on these things.
In my essay, the progression that I used was the EBT system collapses. People are now hungry and are very desperate in these food deserts. And there's no resupply coming because in that lack of security, 18-wheelers aren't going to drive to the local McDonald's or Safeway if there's no security. And there aren't enough police and National Guard. You need like Humvees around every food truck. In a normal time like today, an 18-wheeler loaded with, you know, $1 million worth of food on it can just drive into downtown anywhere and unload steaks and lobster.
Right.
You know, that will not happen when there's a disruption of the food supply. So that I start with that premise, and then it leads to people blocking highways. But as we can see in 2020, it doesn't have to start with like the EBT system collapse. That's just one
of a thousand scenarios, right?
Of a thousand scenarios. So you can have people who are whipped into a racial identity hysteria where they'll go up and block highways. And if you have to go to work or you're on the way to the hospital or you're going to, you know, people are going to say, I'm not putting up with that. But I don't see 20 guys going out and just attacking that now. In my essay, the progression would be the danger from the urban cores spills out into suburbia. Then you have to set up neighborhood self-defense forces because you cannot defend a stick-built house by you and your wife with your kids. You know, if a truckload of bandits or carloads of bandits pull in front of your house, you are not going to grab your AR-15 and defend from 10 guys that are putting fire on your house.
Right.
You have to keep them out of your neighborhood. So the only way to conceivably defend your house is to get a neighborhood watch that defends your entire neighborhood.
Right.
Make it so that it's a cul-de-sac with a gated community. And when the time comes, the politicians will have no say in this. You will make it a gated community and you will tell the politicians. They will not say, oh, we're going to come pull down your barricades. So you'll have a one entrance neighborhood and you'll have be able to stand a watch.
Right.
And we have enough military and former law enforcement. We understand this.
Especially if the police have been abolished and you know that
that's
the police
right.
are not coming. I mean, that was something that we didn't foresee.
The police are abolished
that.
Or they've quit. They've
right.
quit because
right.
they're not backed up. So there's no police. But the progression is first you're defending your neighborhood. Everybody understands that. We're not letting people in at 2 o'clock in the morning unless you live here and we know you're coming off a shift work. So we're going to have curfews. We're going to have a quick reaction force for our neighborhood. But then the next progression from that is it's too dangerous for Sally soccer mom to drive 3 miles to the Walmart for groceries. Because there's too many people getting ambushed on the parking lot. So we're going to have to leave our gated community, our new gated community, and, you know, on social media or we're using our Baofeng radios or whatever it takes, a community bulletin board, say at noon on Thursday, we're going to make a convoy to go to Walmart. So we have pickup trucks and shooters so that we can all go in security and nobody's going to screw with us. So now we've left our neighborhood in force. This is a kind of a military paradigm that's going to be evolving because there's no police. Nobody's 911, busy
yeah,
signal.
Nothing.
So the next thing after that is, well, we have secured our neighborhood and we feel pretty safe about these convoys to Walmart, but they're still doing all of this crap down there. Well, so-and-so has a drone that can go down there and watch what's happening. And instead of waiting for them to attack us, we're going to go down where they gather and take them out. We're going to be proactive against the threat. And
right.
this is the escalation that would lead to scenarios like in When the Music Stops, like with the pickup truck rifle
yeah.
ambush.
Yeah. Yeah. And so in your article, it talked about, well, then the police would be, busy because they wouldn't be able to, respond as quickly as social media allows these gangs of urban youths to congregate
right.
in different places.
They're much quicker.
But
the
now,
gangs are much quicker.
With the police just being so demoralized, there may not be police to begin with. And that's the real scary scenario that I see actually taking place. I never would have imagined would have actually happened in my lifetime.
And I would say that in every county and every state in America, this will present very, very differently. Memphis might have more overtones of Rwanda, like a racial spasm.
Mm-hmm.
And New Hampshire or Connecticut might look more like Northern Ireland. Like, you know, there's still an economy, but professors are getting shot and then conservative leaders are getting shot. You know, low intensity urban counterinsurgency type of warfare. But in all of these scenarios, there will be a couple constants. Number one, the police will be way too busy to deal with regular crime. It will be up to you and your neighbors to defend yourselves. The police will just have the police will be busy guarding the governor, the mayor, the police department. Today in Portland, they attacked the police precinct.
Mm-hmm.
Like they went up and beat on the door.
Mm-hmm.
Two or three cops come out and 20 Antifas rush them and starting beating the police. Can you imagine in America?
Right.
Have an organized ambush on a police precinct?
I never would have imagined I would have seen a police precinct in Minneapolis being burned. And right before that, the police just abandoning it, just pulling out. And that's, really scary thing because the police are realizing we cannot return force. We cannot
yes.
use the force that we've been, you know, given by law to wield. We can't wield it. And it reminds me of the earthquake in Haiti back in 2010. I was there 2 days after the earthquake hit, and we were bringing in aid with the U.S. Marines. And so we brought in first on helicopters. We decided we were going to bring a helicopter full of aid into a football or a soccer field. As we were hovering down to land, the people rushed the helicopter and they wouldn't get out of the way. And so we couldn't land. And so it was like zombie apocalypse. So we just threw the aid out and they started just beating each other over this aid, fighting each other, killing each other over this aid. And we thought, holy cow, we can't do that again. So the next time we came back, we had first, we landed a bunch of Marines. They went and secured the soccer field. And then we started bringing in aircraft and unloading supplies. But when that load of supplies got big enough that it was really visible, there were, by that point, there were 50,000 people surrounding the soccer field in Laogan, and we only had a company of Marines. And you know what? I was there. I saw the guys start to talk to, amongst themselves and say, you know what? These Blancs, these white guys, they're not going to shoot us. They can't shoot us. And they knew, they called their bluff. They pushed right past the Marines,
right,
and they looted the whole thing. And in a matter of 2 minutes, all of that aid was destroyed, was gone. And they were fighting each other, and the Marines just stood there, couldn't do a thing about it. That is what we're seeing in American cities today. People know the police are afraid to use force.
All right, that's all we've got for today. Part three coming up on Friday, the last part of my interview with Matt Bracken. Don't miss it. We'll see you soon.
The Hot Zone is produced by Amy Holton and Live Fire Media. Copyright 2019.